subcommittee of the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for Tuesday, May the 15th, for the purpose of a public hearing on Senate Bill 21. And I'm going to ask Mr. Secretary Bill Bradbury to come forward. And Representative Krieger, I think you're on a tight timeline, so do you and Representative Morgan want to come up together with the Secretary? So I'd invite you up, and you can just grab a chair out of the front row.
Here's how.
Yeah, right.
Good afternoon, Your Honorables.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the subcommittee. For the record, Bill Bradbury, Oregon Secretary of State. I am here in very, 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 very strong support of Senate Bill 21. And I understand there will be some adjustments or amendments proposed. But I just wanted to come because I remember a time in 1989, when I served on the Ways and Means Committee, and Senator Mike Thorne was Senate co-chair of the Ways and Means Committee. And at that time, there were concerns about funding for channel deepenings, both in Portland and in Coos Bay. And we created the Maritime Navigation Improvement Fund as a recognition that the state had a very direct responsibility to help deepen the channel where there is, in fact, deep water, which was basically Coos Bay and Portland are our two major deep water ports.
Mr. Secretary, I'm going to interrupt you just as a curiosity because I want to take advantage of your historical perspective on this. At the time that that Marine Navigation Fund was created, where had you expected the funding source to come from? Because that's been an empty vessel that money has been poured into periodically, but with no sustainable source of funding. What was your thinking back when I was in the third grade?
That's a very good question. And I don't think that I was scratching my head about that. I was scratching my head about that as I was thinking about testifying today. I was trying to remember, what it was a recognition that the state had a responsibility. What you have to understand is that in the past, the local port districts had to provide the 25% match to dredging. Well, excuse me, but the Port of Portland benefits the wheat growers in Pendleton. And the Port of Coos Bay, which is just a small taxing district, benefits a whole much bigger area than just Coos Bay. So that was the purpose of creating it, was to basically get the state to recognize the responsibility for deep water dredging. Just like I think we just appropriated increased a little fee to increase the highway fund, the Oregon Transportation Improvement Act, $2.1 billion. There's a recognition that the interstate highway system isn't just the bridge in Eugene isn't just for Eugene. Same thing is true for the deep water ports in Oregon. They offer us a significant economic opportunity, and it's critical that the state participate with the local authority and the federal government in seeing those improvements get made. Now, you're going to hear a whole lot today, and I'm not going to bore you with a lot, but clearly this proposal offers significant economic opportunities to not just to Coos Bay, but significant economic opportunities to the state of Oregon. We're talking about thousands of new jobs, and on an ongoing basis, thousands of new jobs. It's also really, in my view, it's really the kind of sustainable economic development that really makes a whole lot of sense. It's sort of been a dream of mine for Coos Bay for a long time. And I just really hope that this subcommittee will look with great favor upon this proposal and recognize the state responsibility to help it happen.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Any questions
on your side? Boy, you're in trouble.
Any questions for the Secretary of State? Representatives Morgan and Krieger, whichever wants to go first.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I will just seize the moment here, and I would like to join the good Secretary of State in supporting Senate Bill 21. I come at this as first of all, for the record, Susan Morgan. I'm a state rep from House District 2, which is southern Douglas County and parts of Josephine and Jackson counties. I come at this as one of the parts of Southwest Oregon that is going to benefit greatly from the port development in Coos Bay, and headed up during the interim a regional task force that had folks from Josephine, Jackson, Curry, Coos, and Douglas County, public sector, private sector, people that were looking for economic development opportunities for Southwest Oregon. And this port project is very much supported by that group. I think that no matter where you are in Southwest Oregon, you can see the potential from having a deep water port that brings raw materials in and takes finished goods out in terms of economic development potential and job creation potential for Southwestern Oregon. So you have business people in Jackson County and in the White City area that are very interested in the potential that are that they're presented with by virtue of their link, the freeway system and the road system linked to the port and the railway system linked to the port. The folks in Douglas County are very excited about the road link that we have from the port to the I-5. The folks in Eugene and in Lane County clearly see the potential for economic development because of the rail link from the port into Eugene. I think that there also is potential for job creation and economic development clearly in the Klamath Falls area because of the transportation links. This is something that has really captured a large number of people in Southwest Oregon because it has a great job creation potential and it does not depend on the federal lands. And those of you that have looked at that situation know that there more than 50% of the land down in that region is owned by the federal government, and that's historically been the job creation base in the region. But having those lands be withdrawn from the harvest base really constrains the potential for job creation. And so having the port in there and the potential that it has for job creation that's outside of the issues surrounding those federal lands is a very, very positive vision for the area. So I would just add my voice to the many that you're going to hear today that this port project, I think of any economic development project that we've looked at down in that part of the world, has by far the greatest potential for job creation, and I very much urge you to support the funding of the dredging.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Morgan? Representative Krieger.
Chair Johnson, committee members, for the record, I'm Wayne Krieger, state rep in District 1. Nonpartisan is what it's got to be, because we're sitting at the same table agreeing hand in hand with
you. Heard it here first.
Yes. And it's good when we get there.
Yep.
I also, Senator Verger, I think at one point, I said it would be my death wish if I didn't support her bill. Not really, but I have about 70% of Coos County in my district. You know, I don't have the metropolitan North Bend, Coos Bay, but, you know, Myrtle Point, Coquille, Bannon, the surrounding area, all of those people are going to be affected by it. And when Representative Morgan and I were going around talking to Republicans and had the brochures and things, we're trying to, lobby it, sell it, make them understand what the project was. And each and every one of them understood how important this was going to be to the South Coast, and they all thought it was, in fact, a great project. Well, they had questions a little bit about the timeline, the payback to the economy, the taxes, those types of things. But they understood, I think, most of all, the fact that it was going to affect positively our schools, jobs, taxes, and the economy on the South Coast, which has been, it's been 30 years, 25 years since they've really had the opportunity down there as the timber industry has gone away. and they really understood that it would be a great thing for the South Coast, but they also recognized what it was going to do for the state of Oregon, because it actually will pump money into Salem. So I very much hope that you'll fund the project. It's a good project, and everybody is on board that's aware of what it really does.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Representative Krieger? Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
And I think sticking with the theme of having the legislators who have other schedules come forward first, but asking them to be expeditious, because we do have a public sign-up sheet. And members of the public that are here and not part of the legislative process, I invite you to sign up to speak. With that, I would invite up Representative Roblin and Representative Shoffler.
Yes, Senator Ferg.
I was going to have her hit last. Did you want to join this panel?
I can wait for last as you want.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. For the record, my name is Arnie Roblin, House District 9, from the Coos Bay area. You've already heard some testimony from some legislators who kind of talked about the work group we had and the economic benefits of this deal. But what I want to talk about a little bit here as well is that, you know, I moved to Coos Bay in the 1970s, and we had mills and we had people working. And I want to tell you that it's much like where I grew up in Port Angeles, Washington, in that we have a lot of people who care about and have pride in what they do and want to make a difference with respect to their community. And they want to work hard every day and get a good wage to do that, and raise their families and live in one of the best places in this country. And we have had a very difficult time over the last few years trying to figure out where that economic opportunity was going to be and where we could have those people employ their skills and make a difference. And I'm speaking for all of those families in our area who see this as an opportunity for real family wage jobs again, and a community that's vibrant with young people and old, and building again. Instead of declining schools, we start having schools with children and families that can support on a family wage and an economy again. And no handouts, just real jobs, an opportunity to help the whole state, because if you look at the economic advantages of this when it happens, it will carry from there all across the state with respect to rail, with respect to distribution hubs, with respect to, if you look at the materials you've been given, what it can do for all of Oregon. We need to have this deep water port, and with this legislative group putting the stamp on this and saying we agree and we want this to happen, I expect that this will be one of the drivers for Oregon in the future, and I would really appreciate your support. Thank you.
Any questions for Representative Roblin? Representative Shields.
More of a comment, Madam Chair. I just wanted to mention that, you know, over the summer, Representative Roblin invited me down to Coos Bay. The meticulous care that he took in showing me the spit and the various economic developments in the area and how it affected the entire region really made me a believer in this project and as a Portland Democrat. I just wanted to put my support behind it.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Representative Roblin? Representative Shaw.
I'll be brief, Madam Chair. Thank you. And I really want to just kiss the representative for Portland right on the cheek.
We'll have none of that
Mike Schaffler, State Representative, House District 48, Happy Valley, Southeast Portland. And being someone who's made a living in the building trades most of his life, and as a youngster working in the agricultural industry, and becoming a business person myself, and now a legislator where we're scraping and scratching and scrounging for every penny we can get, and the knowledge I've learned of the economic downturns in this area, this kind of project just makes me has a Pavlovian effect on me, Madam Chair. I cannot.
Bring the tissues?
This is going to help this region, and it's going to have a ripple effect, as already been stated, clear across this state and clear across this region, up and down the Western Seaboard. I strongly urge your strong, hopefully unanimous support for this project. And if anything another legislator from the Portland area can do, please don't hesitate to ask me.
And if I can just say, this is Representative Arnie Roblin one more time. This is the kind of gift that keeps on giving. If you look at the numbers, once it's in production, the income tax alone is going to pay off any of this in 3 years, and it will keep on giving for the life of the project. It is one of those things that makes sense for all of us.
Any questions for this distinguished panel? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Keep up.
And now, Representative Verger, the Senate's chief sponsor of this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Joanne Berger, Senate District 5. Madam Chair, I want to begin by thanking you very much for having the hearing today. It's been very exciting for us. In my 17 years in elected public service, I have never seen anything more perfect as this one. You've heard of the perfect storm. This is the perfect opportunity. Every piece went together. The work group was bipartisan. It was supported by business. It was supported by nonprofits. It was supported at every turn just for the funding and dredging of the port. And then the port was ready. As you know, the governor had reappointed members of the Port Commission with vast experience and success who are now serving. They hired a great director, whom you will hear this afternoon, Jeff Bishop. And so the port was ready. And then by the possibility of the dredging, we have an international company looking at us. Whether that company would succeed, which I believe they will, but then there would be others, because people in the international marketplace know what they're seeing with 7 miles without too many severe environmental impacts, fuel saving, a channel, an international port. It all goes together as perfect. The room is full of people that are going to be testifying. I want you to hear from them because I think they will bring you some very exciting information for you to make this decision. I ask you to think seriously about what this funding is going to mean in dollar investment to the state of Oregon. And I think that's what we should always do when we're investing money. I think your return on investment in this particular project is going to be huge. You heard the director of the Portland Port say the opportunity is awesome. And with closing, that's what I believe it is, Madam Chair. I believe the opportunity is awesome.
Thank you, Senator Verger. Any questions of our colleague, Senator Verger? Senator Whitson.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. The district that I represent is about 25-30% of the land mass of Oregon, and in that entire District 28, our unemployment is running a little over twice the national average, primarily due to the loss of natural resource uses. This dredging investment will open a new portal for the industries in Oregon. It will become an economic engine for the South Coast, and I think for all of Southern Oregon, and I couldn't support it more.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Senator Verger? Thank you, Senator Verger. It is my intention at this point to ask up the county commissioners that are in attendance and then check to see if there's public testimony before we start into folks that are in the building all the time. So with that, Commissioner Griffiths, Commissioner Witte, and I don't know if Commissioner Stufflebean is with you.
No, he had a question.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair and members, I'm Nikki Witte, Coos County Commissioner, and I think John's going to do our testifying, but here we are, another bipartisan show of support.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Griffiths, County Commissioner. I'll make this brief because I see on the sign-up list there's a lot better speakers than I who are going to testify in favor of this. It's a proposed intermodal container terminal. Big outside investment, 1,100 jobs, payroll, $52 million. Oregon startup raised 4,500 jobs, $210 million payroll. It's just to sum it up, it's in our written testimony, and I ask you to vote it on through, please. The president of ILWU Local 12 is going to be here. I just talk to him a little bit. You'll hear from him in a minute. But just for example, one of the people who works in the Coos County Sheriff's Office, her husband's a longshoreman. They're raising two children. He has to drive back and forth to Portland to find work. that's been going on just too long in this wonderful nature-given port that families have to be divided like that just to make a living. And as you know, actuaries will tell you the more time you spend in high-speed travel, the more likely you are to have a wreck. So it just in the hope that finally the dream might come true, we could bring our longshore jobs back home would be very nice, among all the other reasons.
Thank you. Any question for this panel?
I'm not sure, Madam Chair. Thank you. I'm not sure it's for this panel. Maybe somebody here can answer for me. I see that we create 1,100 jobs, a payroll, $52 million, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just wondering how you arrived at these figures. And maybe if you can't answer, maybe somebody else here can answer that for me.
I can tell you how we came up with the Port of Coos Bay has had studies done, and when the Ways and Means Committee made their visit to Coos County, I asked the port to email me some bullet points that I could put in our testimony, and so maybe Jeff Bishop from the Port of Coos Bay could tell.
I actually think that's an excellent suggestion, and instead of going to the public testimony, colleagues, with your permission, I think next I'll call up the port, Mr. Bishop, and ask for his more detailed explanation of exactly what the project is. You have heard advocacy from the publicly elected folks. Let's now hear the description of the project in detail. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming today. Mr. Bishop? And Mr. Bishop, if you have colleagues from your professional staff, I would invite them to join you, or if you're the sole presenter, that's fine too.
Madam Chair, there's only four of us, and today all four are doing something. So
you're it.
I'm it.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Bishop, if you want to give your testimony to the professional staff, we'll get it distributed. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, members of the community, our community. It may be the members of the community, members of the committee. I, on behalf of the Port Commission, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I have prepared written testimony. I'm going to depart from that.
Thank you.
In the observance of time, and visit a little bit about the project, just to give you some details, and then provide opportunity for you to ask as many questions as you like. If I could jump to the Vice Chair's question about the study, if you will turn to the second to last page in the colored handout. The economic benefit sheet that you see is broken into two different categories. The first one is based on 500,000 TEUs. The second one is based on 2 million TEUs.
I'm going to ask you to observe a sometimes neglected protocol of the committee. This is an acronym-free zone. So if you would help us understand what TEUs are.
Yes, ma'am. A TEU is a 20-foot equivalent unit. When containers were first invented, they were 20 feet in length. They've since grown to 40 feet and sometimes or even 45 feet in length. But the 20-foot measurement standard has stuck around in the industry, and when you hear the references to TEU, it means 20-foot equivalent. So a 40-foot container would be two TEUs.
Okay.
The column is broken down into two categories, 500,000 20-foot equivalent units and 2 million 20-foot equivalent units. The concept behind the terminal is that it would be a efficient, primarily an intermodal gateway facility. Focusing about 95 to 90% on rail traffic for the goods. It is expected to start off right out of the gate at 500,000 20-foot equivalent units. When you hear the numbers mentioned and bandied around of 1,132 jobs growing to 4,528, that's a difference in the maturation of the facility. So it starts off at 500,000 and gradually would increase to 2 million. And if that build out and at full utilization, that it would be 4,528 jobs. The study was conducted by BST Associates, is an economist based in Bothell, Washington, who do a lion's share of the economic analysis for ports in the Northwest. They do the economic impact analysis for the Port of Tacoma. They just recently did the economic impact analysis for the Port of Los Angeles. It is a very conservative model. This is the second reiteration. We asked them to get more conservative in their projections. We didn't want to oversell the economic impact. No one has done a project quite like this before. Oregon would be the first on the West Coast, certainly, to have a facility that is designated to be primarily for intermodal traffic. In other words, a ship will come in pretty much built to go right on a train and then go out of the community. So we don't anticipate the economic impact will be quite as severe as it is in places like Tacoma and Los Angeles. In fact, if you know, look at the economic impact analysis at the ports of Tacoma and places like that, you'll see that they're actually taking credit for hundreds of thousands of jobs in the state. Now, it's a study based upon both direct, indirect, and induced jobs. And those three categories are well-known economic indicators, and there is a criteria for establishing those. Madam Chair, if I could, you've heard me go on, and I know you have a lot to do today, so I would like to make myself available for questions if you have.
Well, I'd start out with one of them. One of the things that Representative Morgan talked about was she left the impression that everything is set to go, road, rail, all of the portals in and out. And I'd like to know what challenges you have with respect to putting the pieces of this puzzle together, road, rail improvements, what you're anticipating need to be improved in order to make the project really work.
I think if you were to contrast the possibility of an intermodal gateway being built in Coos Bay with some of the other locations that are being proposed, like Punta Colonet, for example, in Mexico, or Prince Rupert, places like Punta Colonet, you don't have a town. There's no roads, there's no rail. So the investment that's going to be required is going to be huge. In Coos Bay, you have existing roads and you have existing rail. Now, none of those infrastructures are currently up to standards. Considerable analysis has been done on the facility. And since this is primarily focused on rail, the client hasn't shown much interest in what the condition is of the highway system because they don't plan on using it for that extensively. I think we have a lot of opportunities to develop and grow the business, if you will, to make better use of the facility and subsequently with certain investments in highway infrastructure. However, primarily the focus has been on the rail system. There have been two in-depth analyses on the rail from Coos Bay to Eugene, primarily looking at bridge clearances, tunnel clearances, the condition of the rail, whether or not the rail would be able to handle the capacity. And there are deficiencies that will have to be addressed. There's ongoing dialogue, I know, currently with the railroad. There's also connections throughout the state of Oregon that have some severe capacity limitations that will have to be addressed. Unfortunately, or fortunately for us, depending on your perspective, those deficiencies are going to have to be addressed by the state at some point, regardless of where this project moves forward.
Very diplomatic answer. I still don't know the answer to my question. You're pretty far down the trail with a very well-known international company. Somebody must be costing this at some point in time. I mean, you've just said there are deficiencies throughout the system that are going to have to be borne by the state. I'm trying to find out.
You know, allow me to clear that, Madam Chair, if I may. I did not necessarily mean to imply that the state would have to address them. I think the issues will have to be addressed in the state, not necessarily exclusively by the state. There is a private sector company involved in that that does, the last time I checked, make a profit. So I'm assuming that there are some incentives for them to reinvest in their own assets. To what extent, I don't know, because I have not been involved in the dialogue that is taking place between the client and the rail. We do know what the product was of the study that we had performed on the improvements necessary from Coos Bay to Eugene. But as to this date, there has not been a discussion about how that funding would take place. The initial estimate to switch the line to be able to handle one intermodal train came back at $25 million. When you factor in a rapid growth of intermodal trains, that cost goes up considerably because there is no communication system on that existing line because it's a one-way track. So once you start adding sidings and the communication system, the estimate that we had escalated to $125 million.
Other questions for Mr. Bishop?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it seems to me that these need to be happening concurrently.
that it isn't enough just to do the dredging of the port and do the infrastructure there, that you, if you're going to be moving things by rail, and as I recall, you said something about 90 to 95% of the goods, the intention would be to go by rail. It seems to me that these improvements have to be happening at the same time.
If I had actually made my testimony verbal, I would have referenced this project as a seed. There are three threshold issues that the company has identified that they must have in order to be able to successfully build a project. One is they need to be able to get their environmental permits, which the dredging becomes part of that package. They need to be able to get their goods out of Coos Bay, which is part of the railroad question that you talk about. And the other is they need to be able to develop a convincing business case to present to their board of directors. And if you'll look through this packet that I gave you, I've outlined their decision process. The dredging is a much more complicated and involved process of doing a dredge project. If I can draw a comparison to the recent dredging that's been taking place with the Port of Portland, it's taken over 20 years to accomplish that. The improvements in the rail are considered to be much easier to fix. They're not nearly as complicated. They don't require as much lead time as the dredging does. So from a critical path standpoint, we're on the critical path. It takes the most time to deal with the in-water issues, and therefore, if you do not get a good planting of the seed, if you will, then none of the other projects are worth pursuing.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bishop, can you refresh for us, if you know, the rail section from Eugene, the Lane County Yard, to the port? Did it not receive some of the Connect Oregon 1 funds for infrastructure work? No.
There were no funds that I was aware of that the Corp received for the Coos Bay Eugene line. We did receive, let me qualify that, the Port of Coos Bay did receive Connect Oregon funds to match a $8 million ICE-T grant from the feds to rehabilitate the railroad bridge that crosses Coos Bay. But this project would be north of that facility, and it would not be impacted by the project.
The discussion that we're having here is a little like a discussion that's gone on about this building and managing a construction project for this building. And it seems from your testimony that a lot of different people own little pieces of the solution. You weren't privy to conversations with the railroad. In your written testimony that I will admit I just scanned, it talks about planting a seed with the state. Who is the custodian of the overall plan? And I understood from the four-color glossy brochure that there was going to be an ongoing commitment by the state. What I'm trying to find out is, if we were to move this out, what are the sideboards? How do we know what the commitment's going to be? How many biennia in the future are you sitting in front of the same committee, different faces, asking for assistance to make this a reality? And I want to know who owns the whole plan.
Oh, that's a very good question. And Kendra, I'm not sure I know the answer to that question. It's virtually impossible for me to foresee at this point what future needs we would need from the state. We have not had the dialogue with the railroad, so we don't know if there's any intention of their part to request assistance. What we do know is that we've tried to, Senator Verger has tried to envision those possibilities in drafting the bill, and we've tried to make the bill and probably will necessarily need to amend it to be even more so to this standpoint, that it mitigates the risk to the state so that money isn't expended on a project that does or does not happen. It's not our intent. The request is just extremely too large to take it to on a field of dreams type approach, speculative basis. So to that end, we've tried to structure it with as much flexibility to the state and on the basis that if the project doesn't become viable, then there isn't an exposure to the state. To that end, it's going to take time to flesh out these questions, and that was one of the main reasons why we wanted to structure it that way. There's much mileage between here and there on having successful completion, and until we get into the process of dealing with the channel, it's really hard to predict what the feasibility is going to be. So to that end, there's no sense in having a comprehensive discussion over something that could very well by this time in January be for naught.
And one other question. I'm sorry, Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Director Bishop, I might understand from your last comment that are you considering amendments to the bill to ensure that there are conditions that need to be met prior to the disbursement of monies?
We have been discussing the possibility of an option that would require a financial guarantee that the funds be paid back in the event that the project is not completed.
Okay.
And rather than complicate the bill with a litany of performance standards and what have you, just totally insulate the state in the sense that the project doesn't move forward, you're made whole.
You opened an interesting, I mean, you're at least suggesting that there might be guarantees somewhere. I'm wondering how long it would take to, those are all memorialized somewhere. What's the timing on, it sounds as though you're closing the negotiating gap with a potential client, and I'm trying to understand how much time is involved, the urgency of funding this entire package now. We can't bind future legislatures, but I'm just trying to get a sense of phasing or your testimony is enigmatic enough that I'm trying to figure out what the amendments are going to look like.
The amendments haven't been drafted yet, so it's difficult for me to say. We're in
every amendment starts with an idea.
Yeah. I think the issue is really about being pragmatic. The federal process is extremely confusing these days and difficult to figure out. For example, today the Senate is debating the Water Resources Development Act. It's the first one that they've debated in, or let me qualify that. It's the first one that they're likely to pass in 7 years. So predicting and relying on the federal process is somewhat fraught with peril these days. So it's hard to pinpoint a schedule. I have provided for you in the packet the company's proposed schedule. And what we're contemplating is something that would free up the flexibility that basically says if you're willing to commit to doing the project and you're willing to put your money where your mouth is, so to speak, then we'll provide you with the flexibility to try to develop the project as we see fit. In the event that the project is not built, still with its restrictions that it's solely for an intermodal container facility, not for a bait and switch at the last minute, it's got to be approved by the Economic Development Director that that's the intended purpose and the agreement is in place that provides him with comfort that that's going to happen, and that there is contracts in place that provide a security agreement, is pretty much the core of the concept that we're moving forward to. Something similar to the way we structured the land deal that made this project possible.
Then one last question. I, too, have had the opportunity to be down on the site and tour around with you and your staff. What other projects do you have going on? It seems as though there's lots and lots of land and real momentum behind the port to do a huge set of improvements. What all else is tied to this? Or is this now the singular area of your focus?
Well, it's not the single area of our focus, but this particular project is a standalone project. I mean, it's not contingent upon anything else. There are other projects that we are pursuing that do have... let me back up and qualify that. There certainly is some synergetic. There certainly are some opportunities through economies of scale with this project and other projects. So, you know, we have not... hidden from that in the sense that we have indicated that any time that you improve a channel to this extent, all different types of navigation are going to benefit the project. But there are other projects that we are working on that center around the LNG facility that's being proposed. We have had an ongoing dialogue with a polysilicon manufacturer that recently chose not to site at this time. That's been picked up by two other firms that are looking at something similar to that. We have an ongoing dialogue with a couple firms that are looking at some alternative energy projects, biodiesel facility. Biomass.
The point I'm getting to is the channel is the common thread.
The channel is the common thread to just about everything. And most modern vessels now, even ships that we receive, are restricted to coming in on the tide. And that really limits the hours of operation that you can be in business. So even before any of these projects started around, we were having a dialogue with an automobile importer. And railroad vessels that bring in automobiles are too large and have too much of a draft to come in on our channel. So it is, in essence, a golden opportunity to have a client of this magnitude that's interested in doing a project of this size. But there's a lot of other economic benefits that would come from the channel.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Bishop? Senator Monroe.
Will this project cause your port to complement or compete with the Port of Portland?
Well, borrow a phrase from someone whom I respect, more is more. The opportunities, every time that you create an increased capacity, there's always opportunities for others to benefit from that. I mean, it's a common concept in business. That's why automobile dealerships seem to cluster together in metropolitan areas, because you go car shopping and you may not find what you want in particular lot A, but you may wander over to B and find it. From a business standpoint, the markets that this facility would be targeting are strongly different from the markets that have been targeted previously by the Port of Portland. I know they've targeted China, but from a historical standpoint, their primary share of their business, my understanding, has been in Japan, Korea, and other places. This business would almost be primarily exclusively Chinese. The focus of the growth in the market is coming from China, and most of the indications that we've gotten from the client is that they would be focusing on China as well. But primarily the scope here is that it's this vessel size that they're going after, that these would not be competing calls from a situation of the vessels draw 49 feet. They would not be able to migrate the Columbia River as it is currently dredged. So in our mind, we don't see it as a competition issue. We see it as a complementary issue. It provides more opportunities for consumers, more opportunities for the customers, a variety of locations, new places, new ports of call for border products to be exported to. We've tried very carefully not to paint a overly optimistic picture there, because the market is the market and it's a free market and we can't control it. But our client is proposing to respond to what they see as growth opportunities in the market, and if that's what the market is dictating, then that's where the opportunities will be.
Good answer.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Conceptually, how would the proposed financial guarantee be structured?
Well, if I may, I think we're getting to the point. We have not fleshed that out at this point, but I can tell you what we've done traditionally. In the agreement that we entered into acquire the property, we had the Attorney General's office involved in the negotiations along with 13 other attorneys. And there were letters of credit that were prescribed to guarantee the contracts that were in place. Now, that is more a reflection of the companies that were involved. I don't know, when you're dealing with a company the size and financial stability of the firm that we're in, perhaps contractual agreements are sufficient. I don't know. That would be something that would have to be ferreted out with the advisors of the state as to how that's structured, but I would anticipate that we would want to make sure that we were fairly well insulated in that regard.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Bishop? Mr. Bishop, I think you're going to stay in the room, and we may, after other testimony, particularly I see that the railroads are signed up, may have other questions for you if you wouldn't mind staying available.
I'd be delighted.
Great. Okay. So I'm going to take the folks as they've signed up, Mr. Caldera and Mr. Westerman. Ask them to come up together if that's okay. And then the next two up will be Mr. Nablin and Mr. Jones. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Well, go ahead.
I'm Robert Westerman. I'm business manager with International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 932, out of North Bend, Oregon. I also serve as president of the Southwestern Oregon Central Labor Council, an affiliate, which is many labor organizations in that area are affiliated with. I'm here to support passage of Senate Bill 21. The southern northern coast has been hard hit by mill closures over the past few years, and we're in desperate need of jobs, family wage jobs down there. And I think that Senate Bill 21 and the Oregon Gateway Project are a step in the right direction. And on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and the Southwestern Oregon Central Labor Council, I urge you to pass this bill out of committee and to support its passage once it's on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Westerman? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee. My name is Marvin Caldera. I'm president of Local 12, Port of Coosa Bay, Coosa Bay, Oregon. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 21. On Wednesday, April 11th, the membership of Local 12 voted unanimously to support Senator Joanne Berger in her work on Senate Bill 21. The bill will help revitalize maritime commerce to the Coosa Bay Harbor and create many new jobs on the waterfront to help pay for the cost of improving the channel below the Coosa Bay. When Coosa Bay Channel was improved in the mid-1990s, new cargo began moving through the harbor, nickel ore inbound from New Caledonia to a smelter on southern Oregon, and copper ore outbound from Utah. And these kinds of opportunities that improving the Coosa Bay Channel can provide in the future. With continued increase in international container trade, Coosa Bay can become a major shipping center for the state of Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. The Oregon International Port of Coosa Bay is talking with a company that is showing interest in investing in modern intermodal container terminal on the north spit of Lower Coosa Bay. But the deep draft channel must be improved in order to accommodate the modern container ships. Senate Bill 21 will provide the port share of the funds required for federal improvements to the navigation system, but even more importantly, it will create new ocean connections for U.S. goods moving to the Pacific Marine markets. On behalf of ILWU Local 12, I urge you to support Senate Bill 21 and help make sure it's part of Oregon's budget at the end of the legislative session. The Oregon Gateway Project will be good for South Coast, but it will also be good for Oregon as it improves the freight transportation systems, creates good jobs across the state, improves tax revenues to help fund the things that Oregonians need and want. Now, we had a caucus delegate, went to San Francisco just recently, and he came back, and he made a report in our last meeting, which was on Wednesday night at 6 o'clock, and the West Coast longshoremen fully support Senate Bill 21. They'd like to see Coosa Bay get this work because it can go to Mexico or someplace other than our United States of America. So I think it would be really something if this would happen to the state of Oregon and to the West Coast. The West Coast longshoremen, as far as in L.A., are almost overloaded. They keep making new docks, creating new areas to ship out of, but I think they're bringing a lot of their autos up to Portland now to be unloaded. You probably see a lot of short sea shipping, too, when this happens. They could be barging containers that have to meet a ship in Coosa Bay from the Columbia River or from the Sound or wherever on the West Coast it might need to come from or go from our ships, our port, to another port and be loaded onto another ship to continue on its voyage. So I think that this is going to create a lot of shipping on the West Coast by having this port. And I think this would be a great plus for the West Coast. So, if there's any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Caldera or for Mr. Westman before he goes? Thank you, gentlemen, for coming. Okay, Mr. Nablin, I hope I'm not doing an injustice to your name, and Mr. Jones, please. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Committee. Thanks for having us here to testify on this very important bill. My name is Richard Nablin. I live in North Bend. As a North Bend citizen and one who wants jobs to come to our area, I do believe this bill is not going to do that. This proposal is poorly thought out and would lead to great disruptions for the citizens of North Bend and Coosa Bay. The railroad is in too poor a condition to handle a giant cargo terminal on the North Spit. There are a few sidings along the way for passing. The tunnels are too small and have recently been closed because of fires, and the history of maintenance on this spur is not good. This probably means another taxpayer bailout would be forthcoming. Therefore, any cargo coming in would have to be routed by truck along Highway 101, either north to 38 or south to 42, which would mean going across the narrow McCulloch Bridge and through the center of both cities. I cannot imagine the situation that would result from the thousands of truck shipments involved in such an enterprise. The pollution alone, not to mention the tie-up in traffic, especially for the hundreds of dock workers trying to get to their high-paying jobs on the North Spit. However, I do believe this proposed dredging scheme is just a way to get another taxpayer subsidy for the proposed Jordan Cove LNG terminal. To sweeten the pot for the big prize the movers and shakers in the Coos County area have been angling for ever since I've lived here. This string of grand schemes continues unabated, this time trying to get all of the citizens of Oregon to subsidize a foreign corporation. The last time Coos County got any sizable amount of lottery money, it led to the county gas pipeline, which turned into an environmental and fiscal disaster with lawsuits still unsettled to this day. Not mentioned in this bill is the necessity of an EIS on the effects of such drastic dredging on the Coos Bay. Coos Bay is still a viable salmon-producing area and has several thriving oyster farms in other parts of the bay. Before the state invests any money in this scheme, there should be an environmental impact statement, and there never has been a current flow study on Coos Bay. And what's in the mud? Nobody knows. Who will be doing the dredging? In the bill, page 1, lines 8 through 12, this paragraph is pure speculation. There is nothing in this proposal which will guarantee an annual economic impact of $500 million to the state economy. Page 2, section 1, paragraph 1, structural work at the entrance jetties is mentioned here. I understand that the corporation of the Corps of Engineers says a new north jetty is needed now with a $26 to $32 million estimated cost. In section 2, 1A, creating jobs is all very nice to contemplate. However, there is nothing of substance in this paragraph to support giving any money toward this project, and no solid evidence that any jobs will ever be created. In 1B, this paragraph asserts that issuance of lottery bonds will increase the likelihood of federal funding. I would like to know on what basis this likelihood is increased. This is wishful thinking at best. Page 4, section 6, I do not see how this act qualifies as an emergency, as there is no proof that the public peace, health, or safety will be compromised if this act is not passed today and implemented on July 1st of this year. Until such time when the International Port of Coos Bay is an elected body, the Oregon legislature should, in the meantime, disregard any funding requests from them for other than custodial duties. This body, as constituted, does not represent the will of the citizens of Coos County, but only a small claque of vested interests who stand to gain the most from any kind of industrial development here. The rest of us will be left to pay for the mess they've created. I do believe the Port of Coos Bay should not get this wish on its list. That money would be better spent on turning our two-year community college into a four-year institution. That would truly bring positive change to our area. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Nablin? Representative Tomei.
Can I have a quick question? Sir, which board did you say is not elected?
Port of Coos Bay.
It's not elected?
It's appointed by the governor.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions for Mr. Nablin? Thank you. Mr. Jones.
How are you this afternoon? My name is Steve Jones. I'm a resident of Coos Bay and Coos County. I'm the director of an environmental group called OCEAN, Organized Citizens for Environmental Action Now. I work with Jody McCaffrey's here for Citizens Against LNG. I'm not particularly opposed to the gateway proposal that you have. I am opposed to the liquefied natural gas facility that's being proposed for the port for the Coos Bay area. The Jordan Cove Energy Project. The Jordan Cove Energy Project right now has partnered with the International Port of Coos Bay to create a facility to import liquefied natural gas. It entails a land deal with options with Weyerhaeuser. If the deal with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the Port of Coos Bay, and Weyerhaeuser doesn't go through, the whole land deal drops through. Okay, the Port of Coos Bay has been for the last 2 years telling every resident in the county and everywhere that I can think of that if we have the liquefied natural gas facility, we will have other industries. It is directly and totally related by the related with the Gateway Project. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission believes this. The Oregon Gateway Project is mentioned on the Port of Coos Bay's website. And let me read this briefly to you. It says project status. Says the port is in communication with a marine engineering and construction firm to establish project costs and timelines. Actual construction of the waterway would not occur prior to a final decision on the siting of the proposed LNG facility. This is right from the port's website. Okay, these projects are all related. And what you mentioned earlier, Senator Johnson, you said a lot of people own pieces of the solution. A lot of people do own pieces of the solution here with Senate Bill 21. It's a veritable house of cards set up by the Port of Coos Bay. It's dependent on the land deal with Weyerhaeuser, which is dependent on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's approval of the Jordan Cove Energy Project, which is dependent upon the Pacific Connector Pipeline, which is now contingent on the possibility of another company, coming for a container. It's a house of cards, and it goes right down to the railroads. It goes right down to these feasibility studies. There's been two feasibility studies done by the Port of Coos Bay that said, literally, this project will not fly. A cargo terminal will lose money because there is no infrastructure to get the goods from Coos Bay to Eugene. So you put them on the rail, and if you can run 2 million TEUs, through here to Eugene, then what? You got to rail them up to Portland, or you have to rail them down to San Francisco. And anybody that can look at the rail system here in the United States, and in, especially in Oregon, know that the rail system here is, Bulgaria would laugh at it. So we need to do some serious thinking before this money is funded to the port. Everything is so here is so dependent, on everything else with the port. I can't see any substance. What you need to do is look at that agreement between the port and the Jordan Cove Energy Project. Go over that agreement and make sure that the Jordan Cove Energy Project is not the one designing the container facility. There's some things in there that are kind of scary, and I think that everyone of the representatives need to know what's going on, with the port, and needs to really to get a handle on what's going on down here. The people of Coos Bay received an 11-page feasibility study from the port, saying that how wonderful this was going to be. I look at an 11-page feasibility study, and there's no substance. Where is this data? Where does this data come from? It made absolutely no sense. It was laughable, and I am appalled. That the port is even considering asking for any kind of funds right now. The prudent thing to do is wait until after December, wait until after the container company has already said yay or nay, and then maybe think about funding some money. But wait and see what FERC says, because it depends on FERC. Wait and see what Maersk says. And that would be the only way to do it. Don't tie up funds that can be well used here in the state of Oregon and other places. So also Prince Rupert, you know, where they're talking about other ports. And Prince Rupert is going to move 500,000 TEUs this year sometime. So these companies, you know, the shipping industry is a very, very funny industry, and they go up and down and all over. And these guys, you know, are jockeying for position all the time. I don't want to end up being a pawn in the game of some giant container companies using us to get leverage up at Prince Rupert or down in Mexico somewhere for some port. And that's what looks like what's going on here.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Any questions for Mr. Jones? Thank you, gentlemen. Next, I would invite up Ms. McCaffrey. And is Mr. Martin still in the room? Oh, yeah, there he is, right there. You're on deck. Next. Somebody will help you with the baseball analogies. Good afternoon, Ms. McCaffrey.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am a resident of North Bend.
Would you state your name, please?
My name is Jody McCaffrey. I was born and raised in North Bend. I've lived there my entire life. So I do care about the area and its future. I am here. I've given you quite a bit of information. I did a cover letter because last time I didn't know if I would be able to speak today or not. And I'm just asking that there be an investigation into this before you put, that's a lot of money, $60 million. And you know, as you know, $60 million is just to secure the loan. It is $200 million for the dredging. And that alone will not make this project feasible. You have a rail line and many other things that have to have a lot of money and repairs done to them before this would even be feasible. And you have to have a cargo company that actually is going to come here and not just use us as leverage. But my concern is the liquefied natural gas import terminal. The port is saying now that the cargo terminal stands alone, but that is not exactly true. And it has to do with the land use deal when they purchased the land from Weyerhaeuser. And I've submitted documents. I also submitted my speech that I did to the Transportation Workforce Development Committee. I figured that you could read that and it would cover a lot of my concerns. The attachments I have here show continual documentation that these projects are all contingent on the, such as Document C, which is a newspaper article that came in October 21st of 05. And in here, the title of it says, purchase is contingent upon liquefied or liquid natural gas project. And on the third page of that, the first paragraph, it says, the plan isn't complicated, but all of it is contingent on siting the LNG terminal, Bishop explained. And in here, I do have copies of this, some of the pages of the land agreement that show how these projects, the land deal is tied to this. And the port has told us for 2 years that if they didn't site the LNG facility, that the cargo terminal, everything would go away. So now they're saying that they stand alone, but that's not exactly true because they don't own the land yet. The land deal is not going to be finalized for like another year or so. So I'm just saying there needs to be some investigation into that. Before I would dump money, I would investigate that. And I'm not saying don't give the money or give the money. I just think for many years, our port has brought us one thing after another, from a slip dock, a barge slip, a ferry, the Coos County Pipeline. They brought us Project Phoenix, Project April, Project TK. None of these have ever panned out. And some of them, like the T-Dock, we spent several million dollars on that, and we were promised jobs, and everybody wanted it, and we all want jobs. This is, you know, everybody that's come up here is, we need these jobs. Yes, we do. My husband drives 2 hours to go to work and 2 hours home. That's 4 hours. You don't think I don't want him working at home? Yes, I do. I just don't want another boondoggle or pie in the sky and a ton of money wasted, and we don't have the jobs. I'm just saying, let's just be accountable here and make sure before we go waste any more money that we're actually going to see some jobs out of this. And I am opposed to the liquefied natural gas, so is a lot of other people. I have over 2,600 signatures of people opposed to this project. We do not feel that's in the best interest of our town, and we do not feel it's fair that it's linked to other projects. We are not opposed to these other projects, but that's the way the deal was set up. So there's going to be some resistance there if you have to site that to get this cargo terminal. So I'm just asking you, and I also would like to bring up the fact that there was two studies done. Actually, this BST that has this 9-page study did a study in 2002 on cargo terminal. And this one was done in 2003 by PB Ports and Marine. It's actually Parsons Brickenhoff Company. Very reputable, very good study, very thorough. And they said that a cargo was a risky business venture. All of a sudden now, you know, we're hearing different stories. I don't know. I mean, if Maersk wants to risk that, maybe they're using this as leverage. I just know that two companies said at one time it was a risky business venture. It wasn't probably a good idea. We wouldn't make a profit, and it has to do with a lot of things. And I even know it many years ago, like 20 years ago, they tried to put a car, bring cars in and manufacture them, but they had the rail lines were in such disrepair that couldn't happen. And now nobody has upkept that. So that is a lot of money that's going to have to be sunk that has to happen in order for this all to work. So it's not just $60 million, okay? It's going to have to be more money than that. And we need to know where that money is going to come from so that the whole thing works. Otherwise, you're throwing money at something. You could dredge that channel and it fall through. And then you've wasted a lot of money and there's no jobs. So I want to see jobs. I want it done right so we actually do get them this time. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McCaffrey. Any questions? Thank you very much. I call up Mr. Martin, who'd signed up on the witness list, and I have two lists that I'm working off of. Mr. Groner, were you anticipating testifying today?
No,
then why don't you come up with Mr. Martin? It's you two can't get along. We'll have to have you up one at a time.
I'm kidding.
You can't hear me either. Madam Chair.
Mr. Martin, please.
My name is Roger Martin, and I represent the Union Pacific Railroad. There's been a lot of questions. I want to start off by telling you I am the lobbyist for the Union Pacific Railroad. I have no authority over property management, expenditures, all that gets done in Omaha. I'd like to give you some observations from having followed this project closely, and I cannot judge for you. I'll leave that to the local people, whether there's enthusiastic support or disagreement about the project. I only view this from the perspective of 40 years in this building, watching people come with economic proposals. Last January, Ken Messerly and John Watt approached me and talked about a project that was going to generate an untold number of unit trains. That's 100 car trains per day, and I thought they'd been smoking something from just south of Coos Bay. I have come from being a skeptic to being a rather enthusiastic supporter and admirer of this, and I want to give you a little background. The rail line that goes into Coos Bay, all of it was Southern Pacific lines 15 years ago. When the Union Pacific acquired the Southern Pacific, we acquired those lines into Coos Bay and beyond just south of Coos Bay. We have subsequently sold the line from Eugene to Coos Bay to Corp, the short line rail that is represented by Messerly and Watt. But we've watched this very closely. It is obvious to the Union Pacific Railroad that if this project goes through, it's going to generate a tremendous amount of freight. Probably in the range of 7 to 10, the folks tell me who've done some study on this, unit trains a day, and it is perfectly clear you couldn't possibly do that on the existing rail line. Ergo, we're going to have construction. Probably, and I said this earlier in the Coos Bay, port manager kind of asked me why I said it, but at least $100 million is going to be needed to rebuild those tunnels and that rail line out of Coos Bay, up the river, up the Umpqua River into Eugene. That's not going to come from the public because public money doesn't build rail lines. Private money does, and the Union Pacific realizes that Corp probably has not the capacity to do that. Ergo, we will somehow be involved. And if we become involved, there's going to be a sizable private investment in that. But beyond that, it will lead to something very interesting. It will lead to the necessity of the Union Pacific doing great improvements on our north-south line up and down I-5, because we couldn't possibly bring 7 to 10 unit trains out of Coos Bay a day and put them on our line as it exists today. which will further generate more investment. And I would suggest to you, we're talking a $500 million worth of rail investments over the next 10 or 15 years to meet that. And rail lines eagerly pursue ports and ports that are bringing in containers from the Far East. This is all being generated by the demands out of the Far East. Both the Union Pacific and the Burlington Northern are in a race across the southwest, the Sunrise Corridor of southern United States, putting hundreds of millions of dollars of construction in to double track their lines all the way to the Mississippi River to handle that freight coming out of the Port of Los Angeles. You may not know this, but for the last 2 years, we've been pursuing, both railroads and Mexican interests have been pursuing, a very large port that was hinted to recently, about 80 miles south of Ensenada on the Baja of California. Last week, the Union Pacific and its international port partner pulled out of that whole consortium or that whole race simply because it looks too skeptical. Had the Port of Coos Bay been on the New York Stock Exchange, the stock would have doubled in the Port of Coos Bay with that one action. The Union Pacific is naturally now looking closer at the Port of Coos Bay because we have been told by experts who judge these kind of things, these international port developers, that the last good port, deep water port on the Pacific coast is Coos Bay. And inevitably, I said, well, who's going to lose freight? It's not going to be the Port of Portland. It's going to be the Port of Seattle and Tacoma. And there is a chance, and this comes from my guru at the Union Pacific, who knows more about international trade than I will ever hope to know, that the Port of Coos Bay has the potential of being bigger than the Port of Tacoma. Now, that's an economic development that astounds me, and it's better. I think it's one of the best things I've, in my 40 years experience, seen brought to this legislature. And for the investment of $5 million initially, I would urge you to pass this bill, because I think, and I understand the complaint from the individual who said he doesn't want to see all those trucks on 101. You couldn't possibly handle a container port with trucks. You have to have rail. And again, I said, government doesn't build rail. Private enterprise builds the rail. We might encourage you to help us with our Reinvestment Act in Congress right now, but inevitably it'll be the private market that builds that rail. And if the port develops the freight, you darn betcha we'll find a way to get it out of Coos Bay. That's how railroads work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Martin?
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that I heard this correctly. Are you saying, Mr. Martin, that UP is going to be willing to put in a $500 million improvement on those lines?
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, I wanted to point, I'm only telling you how inevitably these things develop. I'm not committing the railroad. I can't. But I know from the people that are watching this closely that this has now become their target for the next 10 years on the West Coast. And inevitably, if the container people come into the port, it has to be served by rail. In order to be served by rail, we're going to have to rebuild that line and the line up and down I-5. It just follows naturally. But again, don't get a commitment. Roger Martin did not, on behalf of the Union Pacific Railroad, commit us to anything.
Everybody write that down. This is a question I'm going to ask Mr. Bishop before we go today, and that is all the contingent pieces of this. You can't build half a railroad, and so I'm trying to find out how the thing is phased. Does the customer commit first, and then the rail improvements come? Does the railroad commit to the improvements, and then the customer comes? Does the dredging happen before the rail? Does the dredging happen before the customer? I'm trying to figure out how the pieces work together and when the commitments begin to fall into place. And
well, I'll let him answer that question, Madam Chair.
Smart
guy. But I'm just telling you that the Union Pacific Railroad is watching this very carefully.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Groner.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Roger was the minority leader when I was a when I was a majority.
But we have to keep you.
We have through the years proven that the opposing parties can be friends, because we have been that very close friends for many years. I will not take a lot of time. I'm, again, I feel an affinity to Coos County and Coos Bay primarily because I've worked there with my locals. One is Coos County, a rural county, a timber county that has been devastated without the income coming in from the timber receipts. It's also a natural resource county. It's a city. I also represent the former mayor's city of Coos Bay, the employees, and I represent the corrections officers who work out of Coos Bay, as well as numerous other state employees. So I do feel probably a little bit of a conflict of interest in that, having been around about as long as Roger, I've supported 9 sales taxes, chaired several, was the chair of the Tom McCall Income Tax and the Speaker's Bureau chair. And I've grown to be a little older and maybe not wiser, but I'm not quite as optimistic that Oregon will pass some form of new revenue, although I'll be one of 20 continuing to vote yes. Why do I even say what I'm saying? One of the reasons Ask Me steps forward, and some of you are new in front of different committees, but I make it a point to say, if I'm asking you for money for my members, then I need to step to the plate and be part of the public employees who come to the table and say, we're willing to help in any way. I happen to trust your judgment, and I'm not just saying that from a business sense. If I were going to look at this project, I'd make sure the state had the conditions that made sure you were protected. And I know, looking at the business background on this committee, you know how to do that, and you know how to do it well. But I do say, well, the reason I mentioned the tax issue is that, quite frankly, we step forward this session, 3 or 4, I recall working on Oregon Transportation Improvement Act some years ago, and testimony was similar there, and we went out and worked very hard to get that passed. And those were the bridge repair jobs throughout Oregon and highway jobs, and I can tell you that's brought millions and millions of dollars to this general fund and the multiplier effect. So the testimony is there's no emergency. I'm pretty much a progressive, I'm not ashamed to tell you. I'm not a fiscal conservative, and I respect all of you who are. And the fact of the matter is, I can tell you that Oregon's tax system is broke, and I could go further to testify, since I do know revenue fairly well.
Revenue committee, though.
I won't do that. No, I won't. That there is an emergency. There is an emergency and need for funding, stable funding in this state. And frankly, my bottom line is, in my opinion, the only way we're going to do that, and I think OEA, SEIU, and all the other public employee unions should be here with me, testifying in behalf of putting people to work to bring income taxes in, to bring property taxes in. And I've been on the spot with some of your colleagues this session with anger, even calling my boss. And the fact is, I believe so strongly that we have to create new jobs, because, quite frankly, that's where our revenue is going to come from. It's not going to come from some conceived plan that I've been involved with, every one of them, that we're going to have new revenue coming from taxes. We're going to have to do it with jobs. So the port of Coos Bay is an important issue, not only to the local folks here, but we need the business expertise you have to make sure this thing works and works right. But the fact is, public employees need to realize they need to step to the plate and help you create these jobs to bring income tax here, but I also get something else out of it. Property tax for my local county employees and property tax for my local city employees. That's all I have to say, and I appreciate this opportunity to be in front of you, Madam Chair, and also with my good friend, Roger Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Groner. Any questions for Mr. Groner? I would ask forward Mr. Husing, who's signed up on the sign-up list, and Mr. Opitz, if he's in the audience. Okay. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Otto Husing. I'm the director of the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association. It's a nonprofit that works for the cities, the counties, the ports, the soil and water conservation districts, and the Coquille Tribe on the Oregon coast. I've been involved with coastal transportation issues in the 10 years that I've been the director of OCCMA, and I served on the steering committee for the Oregon Transportation Plan update for the last almost 2 years. Because of that opportunity, I really had a chance to look under the hood, along with the 13 other members of the steering committee and the Transportation Commission, on developing a multimodal vision for Oregon, and really got to hear about how critical our competitive position in the world is based on the new just-in-time manufacturing and just-in-time delivery kind of environment that we live in. I've been fond of calling this question of why don't we have any deep water port on the Oregon coast is kind of like the eternal question, because it comes up in almost every meeting about ports. It's like, God, we're right on the Pacific Ocean on the Oregon coast. Why is it we can't attract maritime commerce? And I know it's been an eternal question, Senator Berger and Coos Bay, and pressed the port for many years now to work on this. First time I heard about this project, and I definitely support you going forward and helping to fund this, was in October when Representative Susan Morgan talked at an economic development conference about this idea. I quickly called my friends in Clatsop County, Jim Bergeron, commissioner there, thank you. And 5 minutes later, Peter Guerin, the port manager, calls me up and says, well, what's this I hear about, you know, this opportunity in Coos Bay? And, you know, do you really think there's anything to this? And I said, well, this is what I'd heard. And Peters, who has a background in this kind of international shipping, his first question to me was, are there any of the major maritime shippers involved with this? Because if not, I'm not going to take it seriously. And that was one of the first things that I heard about, that this was not something dreamed up by the Port of Coos Bay. This is in response to a major opportunity that's being brought to the port. And so I believe from the subsequent conversations that I've had that that's really the critical factor, is this really being driven by the private sector analysis? Because they're the ones that are going to have to do all the real major heavy lifting on this. And I respect what some of our colleagues and friends in the audience said about making sure that all the parts fit together. But I think most of you know, if the state of Oregon got involved with economic development and waited for everybody else to put all the pieces together on a project, we might as well not even be involved. And so often, it's that early signal from the state and the local governments that they support a project and they're ready to partner with the private sector that really pushes it over the edge. So, again, I just really, I think leadership that's been shown by the port on this is tremendous. And I have confidence that our environmental laws and regulations that are in place right now will make sure that if anything does happen, that it happens in a very strict, environmentally conscious manner. And I urge your support of this project. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any questions? Thank you. Mr. Bishop, as you make your way back up here, colleagues, I want to bring to your attention the fact that there was testimony at your places of people that could not attend, and just to incorporate it into your files. Mr. Bishop?
Madam Chair, we'll go into the record.
Thank you. I think the big question is, how does all of this hook together? Is the rail dependent on the customer coming forward? Are Maersk and the container company the same customer, or are they different? I'm just trying to get a sense for how the project could be phased, given that we've heard Mr. Martin testify that it could be 10 years' worth of rail improvements, and I'm trying to get a sense of phasing or urgency or need to fund the whole project now, or could the study be done preliminarily? And I think the committee needs your help to figure that out.
From a timing standpoint, this is a very complex picture, if you would envision it to being a jigsaw a puzzle. And most people who work on jigsaw puzzles will tell you that what they need is the primer to get the thing going. They've got to get the one piece that gets the whole thing to come together. One of the things that the company is working on currently is its business case to make to its parent company. And in order to do that, they've got to be able to show that this is a good investment in part of the company. We've pitched this on multiple occasions. There's three threshold issues. which I mentioned earlier in my testimony. And the most difficult to obtain, you heard testimony today that most of the other elements are in private sector hands. The railroad is a for-profit organization. They routinely make capital investments in their own infrastructure, unlike public goods that are the responsibility of government. The development of the terminal is a private sector initiative where they will go out and seek capital to build and construct a facility. The only public good that's involved here is the channel, because it becomes, in essence, the single public good that's involved here, with the exception of highways and however role they do. In order for them to be able to build a successful business case, they've got to be able to demonstrate that the public good is going to be there to be able to accommodate the private sector investment. That's why we refer to this as the seed. It's not the deal closer, it's the start. And it's why we're not asking for the funds now. Just give us the money, we'll go do it, and we'll take care of it. We're saying we're looking for the commitment. It's a communication. It's communicating to the client, their customers, that there's a commitment that the public good is going to be taken care of. I think that's the most important element here. And as far as the timeline is concerned, I've included that in your packet. The company has indicated they'd like to be operational by 2014. Whether or not that's a doable, I don't know. But at this point, what they need to be able to go out and complete their business case is that an assurance, and I don't want to say assurance is the wrong word, there's a great deal of certainty that they're going to be able to get the vessels into the terminal to begin with, because without that, then there's no reason in worrying about any of the other items.
We heard somebody else testify that the total dredging could be $200 million. I don't know what the price is. What's the price to complete the dredging to the degree that it could accommodate the shipping traffic you want?
Well, the only engineering analysis that I've seen on this is the one that we had done. And we developed a sensitivity analysis where we took most likely, least likely, and least likely in both extremes. And we based our estimates on the least likely to be the most expensive element. And that estimate was at $120 million. The jetties are not factored into that. That's a different category. How the jetties will be dealt with is remains to be seen. There is extensive study about to take place on this project. That's the essence of the first $5 million funding, as it goes into the Section 203 study, which is a full-blown, very comprehensive, in-depth analysis of the channel, environmental impacts, alternative analysis, all the things that normally are conducted by the Corps. It's a Corps-sponsored and Corps-supervised process, so those questions will be answered. But what this Senate Bill 21 signifies most of all is it communicates something to the private sector who's contemplating this investment as to whether or not the public is going to make an investment in the public good. That's why we're not asking for it on spec. We're asking for it as it is appropriate and only until such time as it's confirmed that the project is a go.
I guess I'm still struggling with trying to get my arms around the total cost of the project. You've got $120 million for dredging, an uncertain cost for jetties, maybe $100 million on the rail, land side development. I'm just trying to find out who owns the whole budget so that you really can see in totality what all needs to be invested to make the project work.
I'm not sure we know what the total investment is at this point in time because of the stage that we're at. If we were to utilize other developments as an indication, terminals run from anywhere from $200 to $700 million, depending on what type of facilities they develop and what approach they use for unloading the cargo. Cranes alone, if you look at the picture, you indicate that we airspaced 8 cranes in that location with the FAA. Each one of those cranes is $9 million apiece. So you just do the math on just the cranes alone. So those are all private sector investments. The client has told us that those are investments that they intend to make. What they're looking for is communication on the dredging. And there certainly will be a federal role in this. I have met with the Assistant Secretary of the Army, with the client. We've talked about this process. They've classified it a project of national significance. We're certain there's going to be a considerable amount of federal interaction on the project. This is a major project. What we need to get the ball rolling is a seed. And this is more communication than it is an outlay. And that's why we're not after the funds on a speculative basis, and why it's tied to the project for what we're discussing that it's for, and why the funds aren't requested until such time as this feasibility is without question proven.
Okay. Any concluding questions for Mr. Bishop? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the last statement, it says that this act is effective July 1st, 2007, so in the biennium beginning July 1st, 2007, up to $5 million net proceeds is supposed to be going to this project, right? So I don't understand. That's just
the first 2 years of the process on the channel is the feasibility analysis, where the engineers and scientists will take a look at what the physical characteristics are of the channel, whether or not it can accommodate the changes to the channel, what the impacts are. It's a very extensive document, and I don't even want to venture what it's going to cost ultimately, but that's the first thing.
I know we're
follow up, and then we're going to adjourn.
Yeah, but you're asking for $5 million as of July 1st.
Not necessarily as of July 1st. We're asking for $5 million at such time as we have entered into a contract or an agreement with the developer who has indicated to the satisfaction of the Economic Development Director, and I apologize, this is something that will be in the amendment, that he is satisfied that there is indeed a legitimate intent to pursue the project. We're even willing to ultimately guarantee even that, $5 million.
One more quick thing. Could you please respond to the two studies that were mentioned earlier that showed apparently that this was not feasible? If you could just respond to that in writing, that would be great.
There are pickup trucks, and there are automobiles, and there are tractors. There's all different kinds of transportation equipment. There's all different types of cargo. The two studies that are referenced were both focused on break bulk cargo.
If you could just put it in writing for us, that would be great.
You bet.
Thank you.
Colleagues, we're out of time. Any last comments? Senator Berger, any last comments?
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to thank you very much for having the hearing. I hope that it has been clear enough for the committee. It's a complex issue, but if we can just kind of come down to what we're asking for today is not complex. It is simply the $5 million for the EIS, and it only comes with an agreement from the company that they absolutely are coming to Houston and not before.
With that, we stand adjourned.